part of the game. Yes. Very unfortunate.
I call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. We do have a quorum today. Members, we have four bills on the agenda, and so rather than saying this with each bill, there are a number of letters in your packets on all the bills, and those are posted on the committee website as well. Before we start hearing bills, we need a motion to approve last meeting's minutes for January 19, 2023. Representative Ingen, would you like to move approve the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Ingen moves approval of the minutes for January 19, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 19, 2023 are approved. Welcome to the committee, Representative Bonner. We have up House File 424. Members, we are going to be laying over House File 424, and in order to get the bill before us, I will move the bill, and the motion is to lay over House File 424. Representative Bonner, I believe that there is an A1 amendment that Representative Pinto is going to explain the amendment.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Pinto, are you going to move the A1
amendment? I'm going to move the A1 amendment. I'm happy to explain it either way, depending on the preference of the author and the chair.
All right, Representative Pinto.
Okay, so Madam Chair, members, the A1 amendment adds an additional crime to this list of crimes that would be added to the list of qualified domestic violence related offenses. The offense in question is burglary in the first degree involving assault. So this is a burglary of a home where somebody's present and the person is assaulted, and that felt like it fit really well. And this is actually something I've wanted to do for a while. This is thanks to Representative Bonner for the chance to provide a vehicle for this. Since it involves assault, it really fits well with the list of assaults that are already in the underlying bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. And Representative Bonner, I believe you're in support of the amendment. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is also a letter in your packet from the Stearns County Attorney in support of this particular amendment. And really, this amendment is important because often when we talk about domestic violence, there's a sense of command and control that comes from abusers toward their victims. Sort of this idea of being able to violate a personal space to, in this case, assault that victim, and to really give them that sense that they are welcome to come in at any time, anywhere, and take advantage of that space. And so I think this is one that Stearns County has seen a repeated pattern, as well as a number of prosecutors have brought this forward, including Representative Pinto, who works in this space. And so I am delighted to offer it here today.
Thank you. Any discussion to the amendment? All right. Seeing no discussion to the amendment, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. All right, there are no other amendments, so Representative Bonner, please tell us about your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. One in three women and one in nine men will be a victim of domestic abuse. 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner. That's 10 million individuals annually, and that is nearly the double the population of every Minnesotan in the state. These facts are stark, but what is more jarring, that is no one is immune. In my safe community, I met a woman who feared for the safety of her daughter and her grandchildren. After escaping her husband, I met the founders of Love Conquers Violence, formed by the tragic death of Natalie Beisel, a graduate of St. Olaf, eighth in her class in med school. I met Lisa and Bill Pugh, who started Maria's Voice after the loss of their daughter Maria to a man who had a pattern of partner violence that went unchecked. Too much sadness and pain. When I was approached about yet another community member in harm's way, I was compelled to act. I want to thank Officer Dam with the Domestic Violence Unit and Chief Warner beside me here today for their trust and efforts to keep our community safer. The result of that effort is months of research, consultation, and advice that have led to the bill before you today. It is a simple bill, Back in 2008, the legislature updated the list of pre-qualifying offenses around domestic violence, adding first and second degree murder, while a separate bipartisan bill, adding first and second degree manslaughter, failed to be included in the final bill. Today, we seek to rectify that omission by adding these offenses, which have a direct bearing on a case in my community, and adding three other serious domestic violence-related offenses, kidnapping, false imprisonment, and burglary with assault to that list. While these additions cannot bring back any of the smart, vivacious women that we have lost, it is my hope that we can take one small step to right a wrong, close a loophole, and prevent yet another senseless tragedy. Ultimately, this bill is about modernizing the statute around domestic violence, providing more tools in the toolbox for law enforcement and prosecutors, and creating safer cities for us all. And beside me today, I have Chief Eric Werner of the Maple Grove Police Department and Officer Kate Dam of the Domestic Violence Unit in Maple Grove to testify.
Great, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Chief Werner, I believe you're scheduled first here, so go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Werner, and I am the Chief of Police for the City of Maple Grove, and I want to thank you for allowing me to be here today to testify on behalf of this important bill. I've been a police officer for nearly 35 years, and throughout my career, I've worked towards ending domestic violence as a frontline officer, and also I supervise a specialty team responsible for the prevention and investigation of domestic violence incidents. And currently, I lead a highly professional organization that values safe and healthy relationships within our city and makes a community response to prevention of domestic violence a priority. And unfortunately, in Maple Grove, we have experienced those type of incidents, as Representative Bonner mentioned, particularly with the Pugh family. Today, I have beside me Officer Kate Dam, and I respect her work in the area of domestic violence. I view her as an expert and support her testimony that she's going to provide here shortly. Today, as I previously testified last year in a similar bill, I am providing my support of this bill as written, and now with the additional amendment, which adds third-degree murder, first-degree manslaughter, second-degree manslaughter, kidnapping, and false imprisonment, crimes to be statutory definitions of qualified domestic violence-related offenses. Experience and research have shown that domestic violence occurs within current relationships and will transfer from one relationship to another. Therefore, including the additional crimes will assist police and prosecutors in understanding the most accurate information of an abuser's history and to hold them accountable. I want to take the time to share some information from the 2021 homicide report, Relationship Abuse in Minnesota, that tracks the known number of Minnesotans killed due to domestic violence from year to year. Violence-Free Minnesota has compiled this report annually for over 30 years. This organization, formerly known as the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women, is a statewide coalition of over 90 member programs working to end domestic violence within relationships. Within the report, it states a perpetrator's history of violence is a lethality factor. We strive to capture as much information as possible regarding a perpetrator's history of violence. Since our main source of information regarding a perpetrator's history of violence is through public court records, we are limited in our analysis. And then also, according to Violence Free Minnesota, at least 12 perpetrators in 2021 had documented histories of violence against their current and former partners, children, or partners' family members, and at least one had known but undocumented histories. Perpetrators' histories of violence often do not begin or end with one victim. In some case, there may be a history of violence against a previous or subsequent partner, as well as up to and including homicide. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm in support of this bill, and I know that Officer Dam has some important testimony for the committee. So thank you for allowing me to be here today.
Thank you, Chief. And Officer Dam, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm honored to be here to speak to this important issue. My name is Kate Dam. I have been a police officer for the city of Maple Grove for 7 years. I'm currently a detective assigned to the investigative division. And since 2018, I've been a member of our department's domestic violence response team, or DIVRT, as we call it. Our team screens cases through risk assessment. We monitor behavior escalation patterns, and we work with victims to connect them to community resources, provide support, and partner with them to prevent future violence. I have worked with victims whose stories illustrate the problems that the statutory loophole that this bill addresses. One in particular was especially powerful for me. This victim was assaulted by her abuser in a recurring pattern of violence, and we were called several times to literally rescue her from her abuser, as she put in very elaborate escape plans. This abuser had shot his previous girlfriend and left her to die in an alley in Minneapolis. He had entered a plea for second-degree manslaughter and was subsequently convicted. Because second-degree manslaughter was not included in the list of previous domestic violence-qualified related offenses, we were unable to aggravate the cases against him and hold him truly accountable. The difference between a misdemeanor and felony-level domestic charge affects detention time, bail, sentencing, pretrial monitoring, and sentencing. This victim and her young children lived in a constant state of fear. They were afraid to sleep in their own house at night for fear that this abuser would continue to assault them. Past violence, as Chief Warner just talked about, predicts future violence. And domestic violence is one of the things that will recur. It can recur across the same relationship several times and multiple times across multiple relationships. Our goal is to prevent domestic violence, protect victims, and hold abusers accountable. And this bill will be a very important part in keeping our community safer. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Do we have any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, I'm not seeing any, so we will move to member discussion. And I do have a comment just so the committee knows when this is coming up before us again. And the testifiers, too, hopefully will have your support on this. It's my intent to offer an amendment to further refine the third-degree murder provision in here. I had intended for that to happen today, and due to a game of telephone, it didn't happen. But under third-degree murder, there are two ways a person can commit third-degree murder. The first is considered depraved mind. That's sort of the traditional notion of third-degree murder. And the second way in Minnesota that you can commit third-degree murder is through selling drugs. It's a drug-related offense. I am unaware of any times where that offense is connected to domestic violence. And so my intention would be to offer an amendment when we come back that would make it clear that we're only applying the new language here to third-degree murder, the depraved mind murder, as opposed to the one regarding selling drugs. So just wanted to put that on the record right now, and we can have discussions about that later as well. Just wanted to give everybody a heads up. Any discussion about the bill? Yes, Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you both for your service in transparency. I've known Chief Warner from my days at Burnsville, where we had a domestic abuse response team, and it had a very big impact. It was a great tool in our toolbox, the lives we were able to affect. But the other piece about it is it brings the resources together, and very solid bill. Thanks for all you're doing to continue to make domestic abuse to hold the people accountable and look for ways to make our victims safe. So thank you both.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Chair.
Yep. Representative Devine.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And doubling down on what Representative Whitty said, thank you for coming today, Chief and Officer Hamm. I just have one question for the author, and this is not to question or anything like that, but what is the nexus for the dangerous dog off property mentioned in the law?
Representative Bonner.
Can you tell me what line you're looking at?
Representative Bonner.
Well, it's included in all of the manslaughter provisions. Can we could we work on getting that specific provision of manslaughter removed, or at least look at that when it comes back?
I think that sounds like an excellent idea. I don't want to speak for the author, but we can take a look at that. Representative Bonner. Yeah.
I will tell you up front, I am aware of that particular provision. In working with judges, prosecutors, advocates, and a number of folks across the spectrum, it is my understanding that that particular provision is extremely, extremely rare. If a case were to occur, generally it happens about once every decade, perhaps. And in speaking with advocates and attorneys and judges and so forth, they said in order for this provision to actually apply, it would be a little bit like lightning striking twice. So someone would first have to have had this very obscure thing that happens maybe once in a decade, and then they would have to commit a domestic violence-related offense. And from a implementation standpoint, it was suggested that it might be easier to not muddy the waters, which is part of the reason that we left it as is, with also the argument that having any of these offenses on your record might indicate a larger risk. But certainly I am open to discussing making that carve-out.
Representative
Abadi. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chair Mueller, and thank you, Representative Bonner. I agree. It does, the provision of that particular clause does give an indication of someone's probable mindset. Between myself and the other retired officers on field here, we can point to almost every one of these provisions, and if it wasn't our case, we know of a case that relates. And as you said, though, it's such a rare thing to even be charged out. I just was wondering about the nexus of it. How do you? So. Thank you, Chair.
Any further discussion? Again, thank you, Representative Bonner. Thank you to our testifiers for coming here today. And I renew my motion and lay over House File 424 as amended. The next bill on the agenda is House File 93. That is a Representative Pinto bill. And while he's getting to the testifier table, I believe his motion will be to re-refer House File 93 to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Is that your motion, Representative?
That is indeed my motion, Madam Chair.
All right. Your bill is before us, and I don't see any amendments. So please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yeah, there are no amendments. It's a pretty simple bill, and in fact, I had a couple folks who were going to be coming to testify and were unable to join today, but in part I'm okay with that because indeed how simple it is. So our state constitution, as members can see in the bill summary, I think that's actually, and you can see right in the bill itself, does contain a provision that prohibits slavery or involuntary servitude in our state, which one would expect. That's a good thing. However, it contains an exception that we might not have been aware of, which contains, it's this phrase, otherwise than as punishment for a crime of which the party has been convicted. This phrase was pointed out to me actually by the former St. Paul Police Chief Todd Axtell, who was one of the people who's going to be testifying today. And I heard about it from a number of other folks as well as being a source of great concern. Our state should prohibit slavery and involuntary servitude. Full stop. Should do that. That's true in a number of states. I should say a number of states have similar exceptions in their constitutions. It's this 15 of them do. And just in November of 2022, several of those states, including Tennessee and Alabama, removed the provision from their constitution, removed that exception. Other states that have done that as well, Nebraska, Utah, Minnesota, I think, should follow the lead of Alabama in removing the exception and simply saying there should not be slavery nor involuntary servitude in the state. Members are aware that I serve as a prosecutor outside the legislature and have certainly been involved in cases that have sent people to jail, to prison. But it should be the case that there's not that slavery and involuntary servitude should not be a punishment that is involved, should not be part of that punishment. And so what the bill does, HF 93, is puts this amendment to the people, as is required for constitutional amendments. It would be submitted to the voters at the 2024 general election to
propose that we remove that exception. And again, Chief Exel was unable to join today. Center for Victims of Torture provided a letter that's in members' packets. I'd urge you to take a look at it. They're unable to testify as well, but wanted to provide this information and support. I believe that there's one public testifier who did sign up, Madam Chair. And that's that.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. And we do have two members now
okay.
who have signed up for the public. The first member of the public signed up to testify is Antonio Williams. So please welcome back to the committee, Mr. Williams, and state your name for the record. You can begin your testimony, and please try to keep your testimony to a minute and a half.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Pinto, for bringing this bill. My name is Antonio Williams. From 2006 to 2020, I was confined inside the Minnesota Department of Corrections. It's very hard to find someone who did that amount of time and didn't do any prison industry labor. In prison, the prisoners clean the prisons, make the food prisoners eat, make the mattresses prisoners sleep on, make the license plates that are on all of your cars, and the balloons that were at the latest event or party that you were in were probably folded and packaged by prisoners. In the Stillwater facility where the prison industry compound is outside in garages, I have worked in the sweltering heat and the bitter cold for 25 or 50 cents an hour. What I was really working for, though, was a chance to visit and call my loved ones, go to the gym and work out, relieve some stress, and try to stay healthy under those conditions. Those are the things that are taken away from me if I refuse to work for the 25 cents an hour. The degrading humiliation that comes with prison labor is not just about being stripped of those human rights. It's also about literally being stripped naked, sometimes in front of other prisoners, and randomly searched for contraband in the form of packs of instant coffee, deodorant, or overpriced food items that the prison sells. The people entering prison for the first time are getting younger and younger. Many of them have never had jobs. Do we as a society believe slave labor and degrading strip searches is the right way to introduce them to the workforce? Slavery, regardless of a criminal conviction, has no place in a country that claims to be the greatest on the planet, or in a state that touts itself as the nice state. I urge the committee to support HF 93, and I support HF 93 unequivocally. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. We also have Tom Evanstad signed up to testify. I see him here. Not seeing him. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify? All right, not seeing anybody for that. So member discussion. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Chair Moeller. Representative Pinto, thank you for presenting this. It's very encouraging to hear you affirm that in Minnesota we shouldn't have slavery or indentured servitude, full stop, period. 100% agree. Looking forward to voting yes on this. I hope that as we move forward in our work here in the committee and as a legislature on the whole, that we keep in mind the full meaning of that, the idea that each individual owns their own life. They own it. It's theirs, and they properly ought to be able to dispose of it however they wish in terms of the relationships they choose, the activities they engage in, the speech that they conduct. We should not be forcing people to work on behalf of other people against their will. Agreed. I do have one kind of lawyery question for you, and being a lawyer present, perhaps, and the author of this bill, maybe you could address it. So one of the things I hope to look into further at some point in our work is there's been a lot of concern expressed both here and outside of here regarding criminal justice, the amount of imprisonment and incarceration that takes place in society. One way that I see is a potential path to addressing that is increasing focus on restitution as opposed to incarceration, you know, connecting people to the consequences of their actions and helping them to make things right by making their victims whole. Is there any way from a lawyer perspective that this would be in any way precluding restitution as a form of indemnification?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Hudson, so much for the question. So first, I guess when you say restitution in my head, what I'm hearing or thinking about is restorative justice is sort of a phrase that I'd use, which is not just making the victim whole, but restoring, you know, a crime is a breach in society, right? It's a breach in relations and kind of restoring that the relationship. And no, I mean, in my view, this is absolutely consistent with that. This is saying if you've committed a crime, and I guess I'll point all of us to the sentence just before that first sentence. In part, this is responsive to your point, too, about there may be some disagreements among different members of this committee and different members of the legislature about exactly what indentured, involuntary servitude might mean. But if you look at that prior sentence, if someone has committed a crime, they may have their rights or privileges deprived. They may be deprived of those things. They'd be disenfranchised by the law of the land and judgment of peers, which is the criminal process. But what it says is that that punishment consists of the punishment under law, which may be taking away someone's freedoms, physically confining them, or maybe somebody's on probation, they have certain freedoms taken away. But to say that that cannot include slavery and voluntary servitude, to my mind, removing that exception, saying that you don't also submit yourself to slavery and voluntary servitude is part of, it's consistent with the idea that our criminal legal system should be ultimately about having everybody in our state thrive, including the person who's done the breach, the person who's committed the crime, to bring them back into society as best we can, to restore those relationships. And we know that, you know, that's a, there's a spectrum there depending on what the person's done, obviously. But no, to my mind, this is fully consistent with restorative justice and then with the particular piece of restitution of making the victim whole, which is ideally a part of any time we have a criminal sentence. And I know in our cases, somebody goes to prison or goes to jail, we're still trying to have restitution to make the person whole. Thank you.
Any follow-up? Any further discussion? Representative Kambaya.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. For the author, Representative Pinto, do you see this bill restricting things like STS programs or any of the, you had the testifier that spoke about the conditions working at the Department of Corrections for the 25 cents an hour, and no, I know there's numerous other programs, and I don't know, I see that retired Sheriff Leslie is here. I'm not totally current with what the STS programs is, but my impression was those were always volunteer, and that participating in something like an STS program also got considerable reductions of your sentence time. Is that something that would be altered in this bill?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Devaney. I don't, so I don't know exactly, you know, how courts would end up interpreting once we remove this exception, but I should say that in the many states that have removed this exception, you know, so I mentioned Nebraska, Utah, Alabama, Tennessee, Rhode Island, Colorado, Vermont, just a few, you know, the flexibility of their criminal legal system, the consequences imposed for crimes, I'm not aware of them being, of there being, you know, significant changes in that. I guess when I think of STS, I think of not so much in custody, and this may be my, I don't specialize in the you know, post-conviction area, but I think of that as being where somebody maybe is not sent to physical confinement, but is in a different setting. But the bottom line is, I don't view this as having a great limitation on kind of the sentences that can be imposed, but it is a statement that that involuntary servitude itself cannot be a punishment. And again, in the states that have had it, this is not something that's been you know, taken away in that way. So we still have flexibility to fashion sentences. But we want to make sure that in the course of that, we're sending the message to people serving those sentences that they are in fact still people.
Representative Kambaya.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And yeah, I agree with the sentiment. I'm just trying to get clarification based on what the testifier brought up, you know, I think anyone here will agree that, you know, the abolishment of slavery by President Lincoln was an important first step for this country to take to heal, and we need to continue on that path. No. If we need clarification, that's in our state constitution, then we need to look at it. I just want to make sure that we're in the details, not putting something that I want everybody to be on the same page, what this prohibition or what this amendment would do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, and I just listening to Representative Otney, I think one of the important things about this bill is it does kind of bring up some of these things that are uncomfortable that we do all need to face with the history, you know, both the historical trauma, but the ongoing trauma that that we heard from our testifier that we as a state are choosing to inflict upon our citizens, and I think it speaks to that. And if there are things that end up being changed in the way that things happen in our correction system as a result of this bill, I don't think that's a bad thing to what Representative Pinto said and Representative Hudson as well. Like, we should not have slavery. It shouldn't be hard to say that. And so I think that it's, there may be some details that need to get figured out, but I do think there's a better way we could be doing corrections, and I know we'll be hearing some bills in future weeks to talk about that as well. But I welcome this discussion, and I'm really glad to see this moving forward this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. And I do believe Commissioner Schnell is in the audience, and so maybe he can shed some light too on Representative Novotny's questions and some of the other issues raised with the bill. Welcome back to the committee, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself and try to answer that question if you can.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. You know, as to the question, Representative Otney, about STS in particular, I don't believe that there would be any issue with STS. We have looked at this, and as Representative Pinto pointed out, other states have removed this as well. It has not affected work programs. We're going to be talking as Chair Beckerfin raised, we're going to be talking about some proposals to address the issues around compensation, around how that compensation gets used in at future times in this committee, we hope. And ultimately, we don't believe that this change, we're standing in full support of this change, would have any implications in terms of our programming and the changes we want to make on that front as well.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And as I said, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page about what this bill means, and not implying that we shouldn't look at any programs or pay scales or anything like that. So, thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion. Closing comments, Representative Pinto. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Pinto.
Sorry. Thank you, Chair Mueller. I appreciate you bringing this up. You know, obviously, the restorative justice is huge. And one of the pieces looking at a quote from Abraham Lincoln, it states that nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. And this is the ability to do good. And I take out that's Abraham Lincoln, but it's any person. And give them that part to kind of show what they're worth. And so thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Whitty, for those comments, and many thanks to the Commissioner for his work and Mr. Williams for the testimony. This has been a good conversation, and I really hope that this is a change that we can follow other states in making. It's important that we have this statement of principle as we move towards having everybody be able to be recognized for their full humanity, which to my mind is what this does. So thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Pinto renews his motion that House File 93 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Oppose? The motion prevails. Members, the next bill we have is Representative or Vice Chair Feist's bill, House File 43. And as she is working her way to the committee table, I believe
that she will, the motion will be that she recommends that House File 43 be placed on the general register. Is that your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is my motion.
All right, and there is also an author's amendment. It's the A1 amendment, and Representative Feist moves the A1 amendment. Would you like to explain your amendment, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. This amendment recognizes the fact that when we changed the definition of gross misdemeanor by one day, we also needed to adjust the definition of felony by one day. Otherwise, there would be certain crimes that were neither. And it just provides clarity around that.
All right. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Feist, would you like to go ahead and describe your bill as amended?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of this bill is to address a misalignment between state and federal law. Specifically, our current definition of gross misdemeanor can be defined as a felony under federal immigration law in numerous circumstances due to a one-day discrepancy. The consequence of this felony conviction for immigration purposes is a virtually automatic deportation, even for green card holders. Notably, a gross misdemeanor conviction could still lead to deportation. This proposed change simply aims to avoid a disproportionate result to the particular offense. Practically speaking, this bill addresses the fact that Minnesota currently does not have full control over determining the intended consequences of behavior constituting a gross misdemeanor. By changing the definition of gross misdemeanor by one day, we can ensure that misdemeanor offenses carry with them misdemeanor-level consequences. This bill is supported by the Minnesota State Bar Association, the Minnesota Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. In addition, several county attorneys' offices have weighed in support of this bill in the enclosed materials, as well as Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. And I would specifically direct committee members to the letter from Nobles County Attorney's Office, which I thought was particularly detailed and eloquent. Thank you.
Thank you. And I see you have a testifier here, Julia Decker. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good morning. My name is Julia Decker. I'm the Policy Director for the ACLU of Minnesota. ACLU of Minnesota supports HF 43. We're grateful to the committee for hearing this bill, grateful to Representative Feist for carrying the session, and also to Representative Pinto for his work on this bill previously. We're also thankful, of course, for those who have signed on as co-authors and for the support for this bill from a variety of stakeholders, including prosecutors, defense lawyers, and legal service providers. I will be brief. As Representative Feist indicated, a single-day mismatch between definitions in federal immigration law and Minnesota state law can cause inconsistent immigration consequences for non-citizens, including lawful permanent residents. These consequences can be disproportionate and arbitrary. By changing one day in our state law, this bill will provide clarity and consistency for lawyers, for courts, and for people in the criminal legal system in Minnesota. This change will also reaffirm the principle that the state legislature, not the federal government, has the authority to define and delineate state criminal offenses and penalties. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to help answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, I'm not seeing any, so we can move to member discussion. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Ms. Decker noted, I had carried this bill previously, and I guess I want to highlight for members of the committee that there's a strong states' rights argument here. This is really us deciding what is a felony in our state versus the federal government deciding that. And it's for that reason that we had, I think, nearly unanimous support, including, I believe, Representative Lucero, Representative Hudson, I think your predecessor, supporter of that. Just want to point out. So strong support, I think, for exactly that point, that this is ultimately about Minnesota getting control of Minnesota law, Minnesota crimes, and not having the federal government tell us what to do. So if you like that, then urge your support. Thank you.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Far be it for me to part from my predecessor, now Senator Lucero. And also far be it for me to miss an opportunity to split a hair, but I'm generally supportive of this. You're making the Federalist case, the states' rights case. It sounds good. Clarity, consistency. These are all things that this side of the aisle generally likes most times. The only point that I would make in response to that is that it does feel as though, even though we're taking this action to bring our law in alignment with federal law, that the pressure to do so is coming from the existence of that federal law. If the feds didn't regard a felony to be defined in the way that they do, we wouldn't be looking at this. So, again, a hair being split, but in terms of the effect of what this bill does and the consistency that it's going to offer in the processes through criminal justice and its alignment with states' rights, I'm going to be a yes vote.
Thank you. And before I'll see if Representative Feist has a comment, but are you suggesting we ask Congress to change their law, Representative Hudson? All right. Representative Feist, did you have any feedback?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was going to be my comment, too. I think we're a little bit more functional than the federal.
Further discussion? Representative Navani, anything? No?
Vote yes.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Feist, did you have any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is a really smart bill, and I would urge your support.
Representative Feist renews her motion that House File 43, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. All right. We are moving right along here today. Representative Mueller has a bill before us. It's House File 147. And we are going to be laying over this bill today, so I will move to lay over House File 47. Oh, 147, pardon me. And I don't see any amendments. So, Representative Mueller, please tell us about your bill.
Just getting technology to work. Come on out. Yes, please do. And then, Mayor King, come on down. Just getting also my testifiers. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, thank you so much for hearing about House File 147 today, which expands the pilot program that was successfully implemented both in Anoka and Wright and Crow Wing County to Mower County down where I live. This program is designed to divert nonviolent drug offenders to treatment programs rather into incarceration because of maybe a short sentencing and there are some technical violations. And so this is designed to expedite treatment rather than going back into jail. And the 2018 report states that many clients referred to the program had the opportunities to actually get treatment by themselves, but because of barriers and some other things, they were unable to do so. And so this program provided a stable environment for them to actually go and get treatment. There are several reports about this program from 2018 and then the one currently in 2022 that talked about the success of this program, including in Anoka, which you'll hear from my testifier in just a moment, a 62% rate of diverting those who have gone back to jail. The money comes from DOC and is given to the counties to do how they want to build their own program. In Anoka, they seem to have a case manager program. In Crow Wing County, they have kind of a phase system, which tries to identify barriers. But regardless, the money is given directly to the communities to build a program for their communities and using their own resources that are already available, in addition to have access to others. There is no, as you're looking at the bill, there is no set fiscal appropriation currently right now. And some of that is because of the Biden Walls economy right now, we have no idea how expensive things are going to be. And so we want to make sure that we leave it open for any increases of appropriation that the DOC would deem necessary. So with that, I'd like to yield my time over to my testifiers. I have Mayor Steve King, who is from Austin, and he's also works in DOC locally. And then I also have Corey, I'm going to mispronounce your last name, from Anoka, who is going to be talking about the success of their program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Mayor King, would you like to begin?
Sure.
Introduce yourself. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, thank you to Representative Mueller for the invitation up here. I think this is an important bill, and I appreciate the time with the fellow representatives here. Thank you. My name is Steve King. I'm the director of Moore County Corrections. To be a
splitting hairs, not Department of Corrections. It's a county-run shop. I had 17 years with the Department of Corrections, so I do know both sides of it. And then Corey here is with the Community Corrections Act. So I think this is important. What we do in Moore County, we certainly know our folks. This is about saving our addicts. And these are not the criminals that you might think of. A very wise DOC commissioner years ago, Orv Pung, said it best when he said, we need to lock up those folks that we're afraid of, not mad at. These are folks that we're dealing with that we're potentially mad at, but they're very high need. As you hear in corrections, you hear risk and need. You hear it all the time. A lot of folks are kind of congregating more in the risk side of things and not so much the need side of things. In Moore County, we certainly see both sides. We care about our folks, even though they're not a harm to the public per se. They're more of a harm to themselves, and that's what we're dealing with here. And when these folks go from fully functioning, we'd like to see that we could get them before their crisis, but they really do go from fully functioning to absolute crisis in a blink of an eye. This drug that's new on the scene, relatively a couple of years, we're seeing it, fentanyl. In my 34 years in corrections, when I first saw and dealt with meth, I thought, there's nobody recovering from methamphetamine. I haven't seen it. We've now seen recovery from meth. I thought the only way to recover from meth is never try it. We've seen recovery from meth. Then heroin came on and the opioids. And I thought, holy cow, this is another animal to deal with heroin. Are we going to see recovery from heroin? More difficult than meth, certainly. And now this fentanyl drug. We have not seen recovery from fentanyl. It's going to take a lot of work, a lot of treatment, many times, multiple times treatment. And these folks, again, go from fully functioning to fully crisis in the blink of an eye. I'd like to prevent that. We know our folks in Moore County. We work beautifully with the Department of Corrections. We have an adult office in our community. We co-facilitate already groups in our office with domestic violence, decision points. We're doing absolutely the right things, but what's happening is we're seeing barriers out there. I myself have certainly given away my kids' bikes when they don't need them to offenders. I've given away my own bike to offenders. Sometimes they sell them for drug money. I've had that happen. But we know our offenders, and we see them often. We have a support group in Austin called the Coffee Connection where it is open to anybody that is either an addict, supporting an addict, on probation, not on probation, formerly on probation, currently on probation. We pack the house every Friday at 10 o'clock because it's all about support. And that's what we're looking for in this bill is to provide these people support, take the barriers away, whether it be gas cards to get to treatment, whether it be immediacy into a treatment program rather than waiting for Rule 25 to take that course. Whether it's housing, we have a sober home in Austin that costs about $225 a month. That's a barrier. As much as that's cheap rent, it's a barrier to our folks. And so we want to absolutely break down as many barriers as we can, and I think this bill will absolutely do that.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I don't have your name, but I've heard you referred to as Corey a few times. So please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Corey Cohan, K-O-H-A-N. I'm from Anoka County Community Corrections. I'm the manager of Adult Field Services, which is overseeing all the adult probation and supervised release operations in Anoka County. As Representative Mueller indicated, we were the first agency to receive pilot funds for this initiative, Alternatives to Incarceration. That money is passed through the DOC to our jurisdiction and now also Crow Wing and Wright counties as well. And I'm actually very proud to be here to tell you about the success we've seen in the last 5 years. We've been doing this now since 2018. Our program, like the Crow Wing and Wright County programs, is targeting nonviolent substance abusing offenders, adult offenders, who have committed technical violations of supervision. And technical violations are things generally that are not recidivistic, so generally things like failing to complete a program that's ordered by the court, using drugs, not showing up for your probation officer meetings, et cetera. So these aren't necessarily serious to public safety, but they are violations that, when compounded, lead the defendant or the offender into a cycle of behavior that we want to stop. So with Alternatives to Incarceration, what we do is we provide like a door-to-door process. We identify individuals who are struggling on supervision, who in the past might have been recommended to the courts to have their sentences executed or sent to prison. And we don't want to use prison bed space for folks who don't need it. It's not a cost effective, it's not good policy. So what we do is we identify these folks up front. We try to stabilize them quickly. In our county, we have the luxury, I guess, if you, for lack of a better word, of having some bed space at a local minimum security facility that we can use to stabilize folks, and then we can quickly transition those individuals to a treatment program in the community. This is all community focused. We have a case manager who walks through the entire process with the offender from referral to a chemical assessment into treatment, basically hands that person off to treatment. On the backside of treatment, we are transition planning with that person. We are walking with them after treatment as well, because we know that a lot of folks relapse or struggle after coming out of a supportive environment like that. So getting them back into the community in supportive housing and addressing some of the barriers that Steve mentioned here as well. Just some quick outcomes for you. We've been doing this, as I said, since 2018. We have provided this service to 121 adult offenders in Anoka County. 70% of the individuals on our caseload have successfully completed substance use treatment. And we think that's a pretty high number, a pretty good percentage. We know, and I know from years in this business, that a lot of folks struggle in treatment, especially folks who are addicted to very serious drugs. And so that's really good outcomes. We've also seen about 90% of the individuals that are in our program have not reoffended, at least within that first year. And we continue to study to see how the recidivism numbers look after that as well. But very, very grateful to the DOC and to the legislature for these funds. I fully support the expansion of this to other jurisdictions across Minnesota who have their own unique needs and resource limitations as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And before I open it up to members of the public, I'm told Commissioner Schnell might have a couple comments as well. So we'll call him down. Welcome back again. Commissioner, please introduce yourself and begin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Schnell, Commissioner at the DOC. Just, we really are appreciative of the work done by the counties on this project. One of the things I do want to just put into some context that is being worked on right now, as you know, and there will be much discussion. We've been having conversations with Representative Feist about probation, and just this week, the governor's office have rolled out a package relative to supervision, which this committee will be, I'm sure, scrutinizing fully. But I think one of the things that that a supervision work group of folks, county folks from the AMC, there's some DOC people, county commissioners, have really been focused heavily on looking at probation, the needs of the probation system, which we know are pronounced. There has been historic underfunding here, and it's one of the areas that we really want to address with this next budget. As we look at that, the work that's happening is to really look at the formula, the dollars and resources that counties across our state have. Because ultimately, we believe that the kinds of work that is being done in the counties should be done across our state. And what that takes and what that means is there needs to be adequate resources invested in this system for all counties. And that's, if there's one challenge with alternatives, it's just that it is so limited and focused on these particular counties. And if we want to meet the needs across the state, we're going to have to fund the system. And the budget proposal we're bringing forward, we believe, will do that. It will bring additional resources to the counties who desperately need them and who have been picking up a greater portion of the responsibility for community supervision. But in addition to that, there's a substantial investment in grant dollars, a pool of grant dollars that can be made available to counties across the state to be able to target interventions just as alternatives has been doing. So when we would like to see this put in this broader context of what our community supervision focus is in our state, and we look forward to having that conversation with you, so that the kinds of programming that are being offered in these particular counties can be expanded across our state. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you. Are there, if you can stick around, that'd be great. And are there members of the public who wish to testify on this? All right, I'm not seeing any. Representative Mueller, did you, you pulled your microphone closer. Did you?
Well, I would just like to say that, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Schnell, and to my testifiers as well. You know, this program, the reason why it's so successful is because it is so tailored to the counties. And the reason it's so successful is because it is specific and it is made specifically for a reason. And so with respect to what Commissioner Schnell says, I understand that we need to be funding for a DOC and all those things. To put this program in a pile of others would remove the purpose of this. And so I think it's really important for us to remember the original design of this is to have pinpointed response for our actual community. So, you know, this is, we are seeing the success of the program because it is local and is locally owned and locally implemented. We see that it is able to provide treatment for those who are desperately needed. As we've been talking about restoration, we need to have this be implemented at the most local level. So I really appreciate any support that you can give. And I would yield for questions.
Great. And I do believe we have a question from Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say I strongly support this. I think this is wonderful programming. And just to echo Commissioner Schnell, I think that this type of programming is what we need to see across the state. I was wondering if your expert testifiers could talk about some of the protocols that they use, the supports, how they address technical violations. If they could talk about any of those approaches that we could scale and try to implement and fund more on a statewide level. Who wants to take that? Mayor King or Mr. Cohan? Looks like Mr. Cohan here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, excellent question. You know, I think there's a couple different approaches to this. Number one is obviously supervision agencies have to have the resources to offer these alternatives that are local and community-based. Also the training and the staffing to do it. This work does take extra effort. One of the things I didn't mention in my original testimony was that the alternatives to incarceration allows us to provide extra resources to a smaller pool of individuals who we believe can change. Probation officers have big caseloads, many across the state. And so to do this level of work, you do need to have the resources to do it. And then you also have the need to have the community infrastructure, support, and resources to offer these alternatives at a local level. And so sort of is a bullet. The system needs the support, but also the community-based resources have to exist as well to get those folks the services that they need.
I would just like to say thank you so much. As the person tasked with tackling probation and community supervision, any opportunity to ask questions of experts is very much appreciated. So thank you.
Representative Tadke.
Thank you very much, Chair Mueller. Representative Mueller, as you were giving your testimony there at the end, I'm confused about, do you not think this should be a statewide program? Do you think that this should only be targeted to a few counties, and you don't think that this should be something that Scott County and other counties should have access to? I didn't understand what you were saying there. I'd like to have some clarification that if this were to come back as a statewide program or have additional funds to it, would you support it then, or where are you at?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Tapke. I'm definitely not saying that. What I'm saying is the groundwork that I had to do behind the scenes to make this bill happen requires more than just a statewide initiative.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. So it shouldn't be statewide? I'm sorry, I'm just, because I would like to have access to, like, that's one, by tailoring this to Moore County, it is, I mean, it's great for there, but I'd also like to have access to these funds in my county, because we have a lot of issues that need to similarly be tackled. And so I'm not saying that this is a bad thing whatsoever. I'm just trying to understand, like, as this moves forward, what's involved, mm-hmm. and what you support as things need to move forward. So I'm not trying to, like, attack you or anything like that. I'm just trying to understand what
has to go into getting something like this done that sure. can't be done in a statewide process.
Sure. Yeah, and I'll just add, too, I think I heard Commissioner Schnell say there would, at least in their budget proposal, there was a pot of money for grants, and I think my understanding would be that you could apply, different counties could apply, based on whatever their specific needs were for that county, as opposed to, like, this is the statewide plan, and it has to be implemented this way in each and every county in the state. That was at least how I understood his testimony, and he's nodding his head. Yeah, so I don't know if there's anything to that you want to add, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and thank you, Representative Tapke. No, I'm not. What I'm saying is that the work that I've been working on this bill to have us to implement this for the last year and a half, and that included conversations not only with Steve King, but also my local sheriff and my local mental health providers and my local police of chief of police and my local prosecutor. Like, all of those people came together to talk about, because as Corey said, that this does require more effort and more resources, and to have something built out of nothing is really difficult. And so what I would love to see each county be able to have that opportunity to have their own program. It's just not as simple as, hey, here's a pot of money, and here, let's go ahead as a statewide initiative. It takes a lot of intentional planning in your local community and a lot of, you know, collaboration within your local community to have those infrastructures already set up, so that when you apply for the grant, if that's the way that DOC does it. Now, one of the things that I appreciate with this is that this isn't a competitive grant. This is money that's dedicated for us to do this. And it's the work that I have been working on for the last two years to be able to get us to this point. And so that's why I didn't say that we shouldn't have alternatives to incarceration in other counties. I'm saying that the approach of just having a statewide initiative is maybe inadequate, in the sense that it's such a localized community effort that it makes more sense to talk about it that way.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And I just have one question for you, Representative Mueller. So this is in Anoka County, Crow Wing, and Wright County already? Correct.
Representative Mueller.
Correct. Thank you, Chair Mueller.
Oh, anything else, Representative Ingen?
Yes, thank you, Chair Mueller. So we're going to apply this to some counties, but not to all. And that's after a pilot program. So the first one being in 2017 in an omnibus bill, that's where we received those appropriations. And then two more counties were added to it. And now we're looking to implement elsewhere, and we're having second reservations. I don't quite understand.
Representative Mueller.
Well, thank you, Chair Mueller, and Representative Ingen. I don't know exactly how to answer that question, except for to say that, you know, it's good to be able to replicate a successful program, except for the fact that what works in Anoka and Crow Wing and Wright County may not specifically work in Mower County, and that's why the approach of piloting it specifically by county is really important.
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I agree with you 100%, and I that's why I'm going to be voting yes. Okay.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I figured since it's being late over and we'll get a chance to talk about it further later, I take advantage of this time to just make sure I'm understanding better about how the program works. I may be asking Mr. Walls, I understand Anoka got pilot funding. With Wright and Crow Wing, was there funding that was put in statute? Were those competitive grants? Or can you sort of talk about how we've gotten to up to this point with those three counties getting funding under the program?
Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, I'm not exactly the sure of the history of all of these programs. Over the years, we have added pilot programs at one time or another, and those tend to go into the base. I think maybe the department could be better at giving some of the history.
Madam Chair, if that's possible, I think it just was in 2021 that it was put in statute, and then these additional counties, I suspect somebody here may have the information since it's so recent, not sure.
Mr. Johnson. Oh, sorry. Can't see you over there, Mr. Johnson. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto. So the history was that in 2017, it was an open competitive grant. At that point, no county was named. Anoka County applied and was awarded the funds. When it came back in 2020, Anoka County was specifically named to continue the programming, and the other two counties were specifically named to receive funds.
And
all right, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Mr. Johnson, do you know then how much funding those three counties had been getting under the program? I'm just really trying to get up to speed to the program.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, I would have to double check to be sure, but I believe that it's $160,000 for each of the counties. And I believe that is a single appropriation over a biennium, so effectively $80,000 a year, not $160,000 each year. Department of Corrections may be able to correct me on that, and John Walls and I can check that later to confirm it.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, so it is interesting, isn't it? So we've, so, and maybe Mr. Johnson, that first competitive grant process that Anoka County won, was that through the Office of Justice Programs then probably with DPS?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, that is my memory, yes.
Okay.
All right, and I'm seeing some head nods by House Republican GOP research over here, too, who is nodding along with Mr. Johnson and everything until that last point. So I'm not quite sure if there's something different, or maybe we can take this discussion offline, too, and we could get some of those answers. We'll be discussing this more as we move forward this session.
Madam Chair, if I can.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you. So just noting, so this sounds terrific, and it seems like tons of work has been done for this, to set this up, as Representative Mueller said. Sometimes we end up identifying individual communities, and then sometimes, like with the Anoka County case originally, it sounds like we have a competitive grant process where hopefully then that process takes into account that incredible work and the preparation an individual community does. So just something for us to be keeping in mind, but in general, that seems like a really good thing. So thank you so much for your work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Mueller. I like this. I like your bill. I like what the program does. When I think about the package that I presented last week now, this is exactly the kind of things I'm thinking about that we want to make sure we fund. Any program that we can put in place that can ensure folks will not reoffend and end up back incarcerated and keep them productive in the community, those are the kind of programs we would like to fund. So thank you for bringing this forward. Thank you all for the work that you're doing. And I hope that we can replicate this around the state. And I agree that it does require that those particular counties or cities design something that is specific to their communities that will be most successful. And I'd like to provide the funding for that.
Thank you. Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you for your comments, Representative Frazier. You kind of echoed a lot what I was just going to say. The success you guys have done up there is remarkable at a 70% clip. Being on the other side, all these programs are not just cookie cutter, and you also have to see what the results are. And each community is different. And if we tried to expand it out to a lot more too quickly, it might not be as successful, and it might not be wanted in some communities. Down in Scott County, they might have the infrastructure, the buy-in from their police department and everything else. So I like the approach. I liked what Chair Mueller and Commissioner Snell said, making it a grant process, but then being specific, but then also the groups coming together and talking about what is successful in each of their groups to help them. Because one might need a little bit more, one might need a little bit less, but your success is great. Please keep it up. Thank you.
And I did see House staff over here conferring. Is there any clarification, Mr. Johnson, for the record?
Madam Chair, just a few clarifications. The program started in the Department of Corrections where it is now, so it wasn't through the Office of Justice Programs. It was in the Department of Corrections, but it was initially a competitive bid. It's $320,000 per year for the current appropriation, meaning $160,000 for each of the new counties.
Thank you. All right, any further member comments? All right, Representative Mueller, closing comments to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for your comments and for my testifiers, also for coming. You know, as we talk about what we desire to have our criminal justice system to look like, I think this is an excellent example of how it can. I want to have a word of caution to remember that one of the reasons why this works is because it is dedicated funding and it is local. And so that's why I think it's important for us to be able to have those difficult conversations about how this is going to be funded and what that's going to look like. But again, the success that we've seen is because they have had the sustainability of having the of the funding and to be able to have control of it locally. So thank you for your support, and I thank you, Chair Mueller, for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Mueller, and your testifiers for being here, and Commissioner Schnell for being here as well. And I will renew my motion and lay over House File 147. Members, that is it with today's agenda. So you have a few extra minutes to go eat lunch. And we will see you on Thursday. We have two bills on the calendar. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.